got all these demons in me. Lord, wash all this blood off my hands. All this greed and envy all around me, had to cut my loose ends. It's so much easier to fly with no burden. I could point the finger, but nobody's perfect. Should've known better.
We still run it up. If you get content with just okay, then you don't want enough. Paper chase to sum it up. Running from these demons, I've been dreaming about them hunting us. Paranoid is on them tuck, but the press, we gotta slide. Try and put this pride aside. Attitude gonna get me killed. I get that from my mama's side. Movie time. If-
you now tuned in to LWAP Radio. I got my man Lenny on the set. We're gonna sit here and talk about the success stories. We're gonna keep painting this visual confirmation. That soon as you come home, regardless, despite your fact, your past, what you were into, you have a future. You have some understanding. And I got my man, Lenny, man.
Hey, nice. How you guys doing? What's up?
Nice for coming on the show. Thanks for coming on the show.
It's my pleasure.
I want to ask you, first I want to start off, I want you to introduce yourself, and also want you to give us a little brief history of how much time you served and how was that like?
My name's Lenny Cherniak. I did 16 years in the feds. I got locked up when I was 21. I came home when I was 37. I was all over the feds, all over America. It was an experience.
Well, give the listeners a little backdrop to it. Like, what led you to your incarceration?
I mean, I was. It was a lot of analyzing while I was in there. I gave it a lot of thought. Since I was a kid, I wanted to be a gangster, since as far as I could remember, you know, being around my dad. I'm from the Soviet Union. So in the Soviet Union, you know, you had communism at the time, and it was to have a business was illegal. My father was a businessman, but I viewed my father as a gangster, because to do business, you had to be around street guys, and you had to be around police, around everybody. Mm-hmm. But my perception, being a child, I thought he was a gangster. That's who I wanted to be. We immigrated to America when I was 9. My dad moved to Israel. He couldn't come. It was like America was closed when he was trying to come. So now, as a kid, I kept looking for gangster role models, and I kept outdoing each gangster role model that I would find. And I kept wanting to be a bigger gangster. So I was like, romanticized the criminal life and just went that way. I went to Glen Mills as a kid when I was 15. I remember coming home and saying to myself, okay, that was cool, but if I could do another 5-6 as a grown up, I would feel more validated as a gangster. Wow. So it was like,
yeah,
the romanticizing of that type of lifestyle.
But for the listeners and the viewers, see, they have no clear understanding exactly what that means. Like, to actually say you want to go back to the penitentiary.
I think a lot of kids also in the urban community, when you guys are growing up, your role models are the same street dude. You can't look up. A lot of times you can't look up to the square who has a job.
Right.
You look up to the corner guy who's coming in a nice car. Nice rims, nice sneakers. He's the one that's buying you ice cream. So automatically, you're attracted to that lifestyle. And all your friends, you come to jail, who's there? All your friends. So I don't know. But from me being in the feds and talking to Spanish and black guys, it was the same. A lot of times, guys didn't mind it. They weren't afraid of going to prison.
How was that transition, too? Because when you think about, like, when we say our culture, we're thinking about the black and the brown communities, right? But you were doing the same thing that we were doing in our communities as well.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's in every community and every, if that's how you're growing up, that's how you're growing up.
So what was your exact charges, though? Like, what did you end up doing?
RICO conspiracy. We got, you know, I was charged with selling drugs, robbing drug dealers, extorting drug dealers, kidnapping a drug dealer. I mean, I could tell you, I was 21 years old. I was a kid. I was a stupid kid. I romanticized it. But was it, you know, they charged me with being the leader of the Russian mob. Was I the leader of the Russian mob? No. We were just Russian street kids doing Russian street shit.
How much time into your bid did you finally realize, like people don't understand, like, a lot of men and women are in the penitentiaries, like, have Fortune 500 drive. Like, we could run companies, right? We just went ahead and took our skills, our know-how, our education, and put it in the wrong area. So how much time did you have in before you finally realized, listen, I'm going to go ahead and change my life, and this is how I'm going to win?
Well, you said made me think of something else. I read an article a long time ago by some lady that was she was a private equity fund manager, mm-hmm. that started teaching inmates first volunteering, and then she really got into it. And she said most of the people that she would teach in prisons could run Fortune 500 companies and are great businessmen. Now, as far as me, I probably realized right away, because the romanticizing of it ended as soon as I came into the feds, and the newspaper article said that I'm looking at 444 years, and my lawyer said, you know, don't hold me to it. You'll get 15, maybe 10. So all that for all the kids out there, it's really not worth it. We romanticize it. But you could make a lot more money doing it legit than doing it illegal. So I remember I was in there sitting with my co-defendants, and I knew, like, they were playing Monopoly. I don't remember what they were playing, but I said, man, I'm about to be here a very long time. What am I going to do here? I'm going to drive myself crazy. I have to do something. I couldn't really read. I couldn't spell words like what, when, where. I knew I needed to redirect my, I was always an earner, and I needed to feel like I'm redirecting my energy into somehow earning something. Mm-hmm. I called my mom, asked my mom, order me some books. I didn't know, but she asked me, what books? I said, I don't know any books. Just order me something for me to read. And I started reading and educating myself, reading a newspaper, asking the guys in prison who were older than me, hey, what book would you recommend? What magazine should I read? Just basically, I was thirsty for knowledge, never had those role models, and found them in prison. Another thing I want to say, I remember reading an article in a Daily News about some guy from Philly who did a couple sentences, and then he caught like a 20-year sentence or some really long sentence. And they said, and he came home and also either did a podcast or something, I don't remember, or he got some kind of nonprofit that at the time they gave him like $500,000 or $1 million, and it was a hell of an achievement. So they asked him, what was the difference between your first few times in jail and the next one, the last one? He said the difference was what guys do in prison. A lot of times we come to prison and we don't think about what we're going to do when we get home until we're like a year away from going home, six months from that. You're setting yourself up for failure when you do that. It starts the day you come in. If you start to change your life right away, if you say, I knew when I came in after a couple weeks, I said, this is not for me. I'm not doing this again. Okay, so once you have that mentality and you know you're not doing this again, and you think about what you can do to change your life, and you start to, I didn't know, I was blind. I couldn't read, I couldn't write. So as I started reading, the world starts to open up.
Yeah.
So the more you educate yourself, you're like, wow, I have opportunities. There's things that I could do. But that doesn't come until you educate yourself. So instead of going to prison to educate yourself, it's better to start it when you're home. How do you start it when you're home? By surrounding yourself with the right individuals instead of being around street dudes.
But that's the situation. I think the world's ran on GPS now. You can't go nowhere without getting your phone and you're going to a GPS. I think our mindsets are the same way. If you surround yourself with individuals if you're trying to go to Chicago, but the GPS is leading you to Philly, then you're heading in the wrong direction. You might think you're going in this right direction. You have every single intent to move in this direction, but if you're surrounding yourself with the wrong people, then eventually you're going to head in that wrong direction. So if your GPS is wrong, it's wrong. So a lot of times in our communities, my mom was borrowing money off a guy next door that I thought was a great dude. The man she was borrowing money off of was a drug dealer. My mom hated drug selling and drug dealing, but she had to do what she needed to do to go ahead and keep our household running. This is what we're surrounded with in our communities. So if you're not focused, if you're not focused on your present, your future, you could be going in the wrong direction and don't even know it. You might think that you're doing the right things because this is what survival calls for in our communities. So what kept you focused on the inside? Like once you had that drive, once you understood that education was key and you had to prepare yourself for the outside, what kept you motivated? Because there's times where like you feel as though like, man, I'm burnt out. Like I'm burnt out. I know I'm gone, but I'm burnt out with this shit.
I never felt like that. For me, there was no chance that I couldn't fail. It was like I was so focused on success. And I remember, like, if I would sit with a guy, like, DL conversations about selling drugs or something else, if I would sit with a person and have that type of conversation, I didn't entertain that type of conversation, but within a minute, I would be asking myself, what am I doing sitting here talking to him? What are we talking about? I'm wasting my time. Let me get out of here. It was automatic in my head. And I went back to educate myself and learn something. Like, people say they're bored in jail. I was never bored in jail. I was always busy. My stacks of books and magazines always got bigger, not smaller. And I read 5, 6, 7 hours a day. So it was, I never felt, I was always focused. I just wanted to come home and go at it.
What was the most important lesson that you took from the penitentiary that you still carry with yourself today?
I mean, there were so many. I don't know what was the most important.
With me is, and I noticed this, Lenny, that each and every day that I'm out here, I find a million things to be grateful for. I was told in 1997, February 22nd, 1997, that I would die in prison. I was told I would never leave home. And I remember when I turned to face my mother and my family, I seen them crying. I heard them shouting. You know, I heard, you know, the courtroom door slam, people running around. But I also looked over towards the victim's family. And then I realized there was no clear winners that day in that courtroom. So that day was the day that I said that I'm going to go to the penitentiary and I'm going to become 1% better each and every day. That I will leave that penitentiary a better man. I will leave that penitentiary spiritually, educationally, I'm talking about physically, on all facets. I wanted to make sure that I left better. That was my drive. Like, dude, you're always like, you working hard as hell. I remember people telling me, you working hard as hell. Like, for what, bro? I remember people telling me, why are you bucking traffic to get to these programs when you're never going home? This is the type of stuff that we hear inside the penitentiary. So if you're not mentally focused, if you're not strong in your walk, you know, you can lose everything.
My friends used to tell me, hey, we didn't take your yard privilege. Just come on out, joke with me, right? Because I'm not going to sit there and talk about who called who a rat, who abused who, or all the jail bullshit. It's not interesting. How long can you talk about it? There was a lot of lessons, probably. I can't think of a main one, but I knew I wanted to come home. I wanted to succeed. I knew I never wanted to come back
succeed
to prison.
Succeed in what, though? See, with me, I knew that reentry was my thing. Reentry route. Reentry was my thing. I wanted to provide resources. Yeah. I wanted to make sure people had what they needed to become that, you know, to be able to sustain, not just come out and be cool, sustain when they come out. How did you know? Because real estate's your thing. And we're going to dive into that.
I mean, it's
how
not
did
just
you
real
know?
Estate.
Okay, yeah. Well, go ahead. Cover a couple of things that, you know, you're doing out here now and that you're passionate about. But did you know you were going to transition to that type of business?
Success for me, I guess success, that's a good question, because success for everybody is different. For me, success, making money, I'm going to make money. So it's more than just making money. I wanted to somehow give back. I knew I was a kid with the wrong values, wrong role models, so I wanted to come home and make sure I'm helping other kids. And I mentor a bunch of young kids who have their own real estate now, kids that were leaning towards the street, and I helped them go the other way. I mean, I always want to help. It's not just about making money. You got to feel like your life means something.
Correct.
Because you can make money and be a piece of shit.
Right.
You know, look, I mean, there's businessmen who will rob and steal, and they'll say they're wealthy, they make money, but they're not helping anybody. I don't want to be that type of person in my businesses. I run a different, not, I'm in real estate, I own a body shop, I'm building a daycare. I take great pride in making sure that my workers have a job. I take big responsibility for making sure that I feed their families, that I'm responsible for that. Mm-hmm. So if you work for me and I value you as a worker, I have to make sure that you're eating too. It's not just about me. Mm-hmm. So when you run the business, if you have the mentality of we're a family, we're doing this together, if you take responsibility for those workers, for me it's more fulfilling than just making money.
You just covered three different areas. Maybe, I know you got a lot more, right? Areas that, you know, you're doing business. And also, you want to make sure that you leave a legacy, obviously.
Absolutely.
You
know?
So, my question to you is,
but a legacy. How I wanted to make sure that I raise. For me, I have a daughter. It's very important for me how I raise her. What kind of values? What kind of values she has? What type of grown up she is? What type of woman she grows into? Is she going to give? Or is she going to take from the world?
And those values, and that's a lot of things people don't understand. Like listeners right now, they hear that men and women go to prison. They think we don't have values. They don't think that we have anything. We don't stand on things. Like, we always have these qualities, and that's where people get it twisted. We always had these qualities. It was only until we started to change our heart, change our surroundings, change our mindset that we're able to now think about that. Like, I am hurt that I dropped the ball on my family. And that's why it's super important that I'm out here and that I succeed. Not succeed, like you said, just in business, but succeed is people always remembering that it wasn't just about himself. They got this African proverb that says, if you're trying to travel fast, you travel alone. But if you want to travel far, you travel together. I'm huge on making sure that I'm tied to the penitentiary, but also tied to the families that are out here. So when you came home, because we're talking about business and you growing to where you're at today, how hard was the struggle to get to where you're at today? And where did you start off at? Did you have some properties? Did you have some money before you got like, because coming home, everybody's situation is different.
I mean, I was a hustler ever since I was a kid. I made money always. So, I mean, I had a few properties before I got arrested that I was able to grow into more properties while I was in prison. I had good friends, good people helping me, mostly my mother and my aunt, but I had close friends that were also in my corner that would help. So when I came home, yeah, I had a start. But even without a start, like I remember the first house that we did, I came home. All my friends are in real estate. I asked them, what do I buy? They kind of helped me. They said, hey, buy this house. You're going to make this much money. This is how much you're going to invest into it. I did it blindly. I didn't even run numbers. I just knew I trusted my friends. Bought the house. At the time, I didn't really have money to rehab it. I was going to ask everybody I know, hey, lend me money to rehab it. Let's go into partnership. And one guy decided to do it with me. I bought the property. It was like $30,000 for the house. We had to rehab it. It was 80 grand. He put up the money to rehab it. I don't remember what we sold it for. I think we made 60 grand total. We split it 30-30. And then we moved on to the net. Once he seen the profit, he gave me more money. I went and bought another house. We made money again. And once I started making money, and once people see that you're successful and you're doing it, now all of a sudden, all the same people that were telling me no, they're coming back saying, hey, You want to borrow money? How about we go into a partnership? Let's do it together. Mm-hmm. So once people will see your success, when you first come home, it's hard. I remember in jail, I used to say, you know, if you don't make $1 million the first year you come home, you're in the way. Okay, then you come home and you realize that it's much harder than you thought it was theoretically. Do you have your credit? The most important thing when you come home, do you have your credit? I actually had credit. I told my mom and my aunt to add me to 3 credit cards as a co-signer or a co-borrower.
Yeah, piggyback.
To give me credit. So I foreseen that because I was, before I went away, I was already into real estate. So now I come home with a good credit score, but I have no tax returns. So to go borrow money from a bank, they're gonna ask you for two years of tax returns. If you don't have those tax returns, how are you gonna borrow? They don't know who you are. They need to know. Your tax returns is like your paperwork in jail, basically.
Right.
Okay, and if you don't have your tax returns or your street name,
right,
even in the street, who are they going to give the work to? If they know you, your name's good, you're not going to steal from them, they know, okay, he's just about getting money. That's your credit report, and your credit report shows how good you are at borrowing and giving back, and your tax returns shows how much you could borrow.
What was that? What did that feel like, though, like when you first flipped your first property? Because that's movement.
Yeah,
that's,
it was. I mean, I had bigger dreams and aspirations. It was wasn't. Yeah, it wasn't about nothing. We did it. Let's go on to the next one.
Do you think did you think that you were going to continue to do that? Because see, you could be happy.
Yeah, I know. No. I love real estate. I feel like an artist. Like when I do houses, for me, it's not just I build well. You know, anything you do, you have to love it. Don't just half-ass it. If you're not enjoying doing it, don't do it.
Right.
I'd rather build a good product and make less money than build a shitty product and make more money. So for me, you know, I love doing it. Anything I do, I love waking up on Monday when people say, hey, man, Monday's tomorrow. I don't have that. When I'm bored, I go to work. You know, and for me, I never feel like I work because I love what I do.
Do you think that your culture, your background, your country, because we're talking about, you know, we didn't tap into that, but different cultures, like we might sit around here, you know, you in the States and stuff, like you see these options, you see these opportunities, you're like, I could always get to it.
Yeah.
Well, you're in your country, you had to feel, can you talk about that a little bit?
It wasn't my country's culture, it was everyone who came here with me, all of my community. You know, I'm from Russia, from Soviet Union, from Belarus, a Russian Jew. And most of us in the late 80s, early 90s, it was all Russian Jews coming. And most of them are educated. If not our parents, then us, we got to the bag. So now when I came home, everyone around me is extremely successful.
Mm-hmm.
So a part of the thing that I seen in prison with the Black and Spanish community is you guys don't have those opportunities. Like I said, who you're looking up to is the corner dope boy, the owner of the block, or whoever else. So it's very hard to expand your horizons and to look further past the corner, past Philly. What's going on a bigger scale. So it definitely helped, you know.
Is there anything that you learned inside the penitentiary that will continue to guide you? Like with me, it's waking up each and every moment, just having this opportunity here, like meeting you. I believe that God puts people in your life for reasons. You have to pick up on the sign. Sometimes you walk right past the sign. So it's like, I remember just meeting you. You're coming in the house, you're checking on the property that I'm particularly living in. This is how we meet. And we kick it off from the rip. Me and you just start, we start to talk about not only the penitentiary, but you ask me, where do I see myself moving forward? You didn't even know me. And When you just talked about how, you know, you want to make things right in your community, or, you know, you want to do things right, I know that. I felt that particular day. So what do you do? You said you went, you took a couple dudes under your belt. So like, when you're pulling people, it's extremely hard to trust people. You're successful now. So how do you do that? There's certain people I won't allow in my circle now. You know what I mean? Because I don't want to be pulled down. It doesn't mean I won't lend a help to them. It doesn't mean I won't speak to them. So how do you vent who you deal with when you're trying to give that help out?
I mean, I'll help anybody. If I get a phone call and they're asking me questions, I'll help. But if I see that it's draining my energy or it's somebody who's not really trying to do anything, then I'll probably pull back. But if, as long as I see that, you know, you give everybody opportunity, and if I see them taking that opportunity, at the end of the day, I always took, you can't tell me no. I'm going, you know, I don't hear no. I hear come back later. So what I look for in somebody I'm mentoring is the same thing. I have a young boy that, like, abuses me. Okay, I don't even like picking up the phone. Like, no, I love the kid. Like, yeah. Abuses me, meaning he wants to talk for a half hour. He has a million right. questions.
Right.
But I see He's myself
hungry.
In him.
He's hungry.
He's hungry.
Okay.
So how do I not help him?
Yeah.
So I pick up. Sometimes I don't want to, but I know he's trying to get to the bag. He's trying to make money. I respect it, and I help him. And he's 26 years old. He already has 15 doors.
What do you mean by doors?
By doors, he has, say, he has a, his first, he kept looking for houses to buy, like a single small home. I kept saying, listen, you could do something bigger. Find a duplex, triplex. Found him a triplex. He did it. He was scared. He was like, how am I? I said, there's no difference between doing a single family residence and a triplex. You're just making more money. So we got it. He bought it. He fixed it. He rented it out. And he refinanced it, took the money out. We helped him get a loan, a hard money loan, after he bought it to fix the place up. Then he went to a conventional bank, refinanced the property, paid back the lenders, paid back himself, and he had a triplex, and he had some money left over for his next property.
So you're giving us some gain that a lot of us don't know. I'm learning. I'm learning yeah. right now from you. So what advice do you have for a person that they might be going into real estate? Is there any advice that you would give them, good and bad?
I mean, I believe, I always say any business is a good business. You could come home, you could get into real estate if that's what you know. If you're passionate about cooking, you could open a lunch truck. That's like something that's small, 20, 30, 40,000, you could own a business. I mean, anything that you're passionate about, you could do. It's not so it's not like, I'm not gonna say go into real estate. If you're passionate about real estate, a guy who's passionate about real estate, he's already, by the time he's coming home, he understands. If you're coming to me in prison, say, like, before you're coming home, and you don't know what a mortgage is, if you don't know what your credit is, if you don't know none of this, you didn't take your time to learn, so you're probably not passionate about it. So I say, whatever you're passionate about, learn that. If you're not passionate about anything, read. Read the newspaper. My biggest educator was the Wall Street Journal. I remember I used to read the newspaper front to back. I didn't understand 80% of what I was reading. It was just a discipline to read it.
Mm.
Like about calls, puts, futures, options. I didn't even know what these things are. Today I know. Are they helping me in life today? No. But it was something I wanted to have some kind of education that anybody who's a street person probably doesn't have. So I wanted to be well-rounded. So I used to read about anything. It would be about some other country, Brazil, this, that, didn't matter. Just different cultures. And the more I read the newspaper, the more I learned. Even somebody out here, if they just read the newspaper, if you're reading the daily news, you know more about the real estate than most people who live in Philadelphia. The trends are there. Where's Section 8 paying more money? If they're paying more money there, that's probably a neighborhood that's about to become worse. Okay, where is, like, they'll show a map and you'll see where the neighborhoods are, where there's new constructions. Where there's new construction, you could kind of, like, I'm big on Kensington right now. I buy everything in Kensington because you have Temple on one side, you have Lehigh Avenue that they said it'll never cross over, and it crossed over on the other side.
Penn's Landing, body of water.
Yeah, Aramingo, because yeah. It's a little further than Penn's Landing. Yeah. Aramingo's pushing this way.
Port Richmond.
And on the back end, you have a friend of mine, George Manosis, who invests $40 million a year into Harrogate. So you got small Kensington that's getting pushed in from four sides. Mm. How long you think? So that's a completely different neighborhood. You got the 95, you got the L, everything is there for its success.
So we're talking about gentrification here. Yeah. We're talking about pushing in.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, pushing in is pushing out.
Yeah.
Okay, because there's gentrification going the other way in Mayfair, Tyconia.
Right.
Right? Southwest Philly.
Right.
So gentrification, Germantown used to be German.
Yeah.
Then it was Jewish. Now it's Black. Okay, so neighborhoods change. That's just the demographics of any city. If you look over a 50-year period, some group of people will move out, some group of people will move in. That's just a part of real estate. But all of this you will see if you just read the daily news. Okay, the trends are there. Where is UPenn building? Okay, I seen it. The map. Where are they investing money? Okay, so they're investing from this street to this street and this street and that street. You know you should buy in that area or right outside that area, or they're expanding, and you see how they're expanding. All this is in the newspaper and a bunch of other stuff. It's not just that. You'll see lunch trucks are doing amazing in California. They're doing $500,000 profit a year. So you say, wait a minute, we don't really have that in Philadelphia like that, like nice restaurants. You say, okay, I'm going to get a lunch truck. Or a car wash. I mean, car washes are expensive, but I'm just giving you an example of things that you could look for if you know where to look. And I feel like the first place to start is a newspaper.
I want to talk about the education aspect, because reading a newspaper is education. In the penitentiary, they withhold, I don't know about in the feds, in the state, because I've been in about 5 to 6 different state institutions, they withhold education. So people who have indeterminate sentences, you got 20 to 40, 30, 60, 40 years. Me coming in with a life sentence, when I would sign up for educational programming, workshops, groups, you name it, I would be on a huge waiting list. Or they'll tell me I'm not even eligible to get into this particular program or educational opportunity, because they told me flat out they didn't believe that I would leave the penitentiary. So it's important.
But what were the programs? Like what kind? Like
anything. Anything from trade certifications to trauma workshops to reentry.
Okay.
And the reason that when I got into the reentry space, I was the very first facilitator to be hired by the DOC to go ahead and facilitate RSO groups, reentry service office groups. But what ended up happening was they would tell me that the criteria was people 18 months or less. So I had lifers. I had dudes 20 to 40, 30, 60, never stopped believing that they would go home one day, right? So those programs were important to them. But Pennsylvania only allows 10% of their courtroom size to go ahead and be one lifer. So we're talking about one lifer in the entire 15, you know, a class of 15. You understand what I'm saying? So
In the feds, it's mostly inmates teaching inmates. Any kind of programs you got, somebody came, some accountant came and is teaching accounting. Some real estate developer came and he's teaching real estate. So we mostly teach ourselves. Personally, I used to ask my friends or family to order me newspapers, order me books. It's possible to order books through a library system in the feds, but it's very hard. So I used to have my family help me with that. I mean, prison system, the feds and the state is messed up, but that's a whole, like, I think it's set up to fail. Yeah, it's not like they're educating. You know, in other countries, it's about the other country's jail system is made to rehabilitate. In America, it's made to punish.
Right.
Okay, so it's not about rehabilitation. Other countries understand that, okay, this guy's going to come home. How are we setting him up to make sure he doesn't do this again in our country? So I think we're a very long way away from this jail system changing.
And this is why we do. This is why we do what we do. This is why you're here today on LWOP Radio. And that's my next question. Like, what would you tell somebody that is serving time, men or female, male? What would you tell somebody that's in a penitentiary right now that believes that their chances of success are impossible? Because you hear it all the time. Like, we know certain dudes. Like, we were talking about somebody when I first met you about who I know, and he's doing great out here in the podcast and the stuff like that, right? But it seems like there's very few in between success stories. We know them. Society doesn't know. But that's why you're here on the show. So what would you tell somebody on the inside, man, that's like, you know, struggling with that?
I think if a person is not sure and they think they won't succeed, they probably won't. Because it's like for me, the chance of not succeeding wasn't an option. A person has to believe.
That's you. Okay, yeah. Okay, good point.
So I used to talk to people like that all the time. Hey, but you could do. It was always, at the end, they always won with their negativity, where I would just say, you know what, I'm done. It's mm-hmm. not, you can't, you. I don't think you could teach positivity. It's either you got it or you don't have it. So a person who believes will look how to make it happen. If a person doesn't believe, how can you convince them? That's the disposition on life.
You can believe all you want, but then you got to have some type of education and skill or some type of know-how in that lane that you're going into. So when you were going into that lane, that real estate, you was going in there green. You was going in there by, you had some people around you, going back to our support team. You had people around you to say, you know what, buy this house. This is what it's going to get you.
Yeah.
This is where you're going to be at. A lot of us don't have that coming home. When I came home, if it wasn't for the people that I had surrounding me, that was like boom, boom,
but
boom.
But you did have it, right?
Right. We all don't, though.
Yeah, but little by little, if you have it in you, you met me, right? We exchanged numbers. You called me. You didn't have to, right? You could have been that guy who was like, okay, you had a conversation with me, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Okay, so a person who believes, even in jail, right? Maybe you're not financially, your family can't send you books, they can't send you newspapers. Mm-hmm. But there's a guy like me in jail who's getting the newspapers, who's getting the books, who, if you befriend him and ask him to, hey, can I get your newspaper? For my newspaper, there was a line of 5-6 people.
Yeah, that's all it is.
Literally.
We got lines.
Okay? The same way with the book. So a person who wants it will find it.
Yeah. My next question is, like, what's your message to society that success is impossible for people like us? Because that's how they look at it. They think we're anomalies. Like, since I've came home, I've been home 2 months after serving 28 and a half years in prison on a life sentence. Every room that I go in, it seems like the person that I either get introduced to or I seek out is like, wow, you did 28 years in prison? It's impossible. Because it seems like we're so different. Like, the way we carry ourselves, the way we look, the way we articulate ourselves, it's like they think we're anomalies. No, there's thousands of men and women in the penitentiary that, if given that same opportunity, could be here today doing those same things. So what is your message to society as a whole, like, about winning, like, about us not winning, coming home from the penitentiary?
So a message to society about winning?
Yeah, yeah. What would you tell society? Because society automatically thinks we're gonna be part of that failing rate.
I think it's better to show them than to tell them. And I'm just on the beginning. I don't feel I'm very successful yet. There's still a lot of places I want to go.
How many homes you own? How many doors?
I own over 50 doors. I own half a block where my body shop is, probably more than half a block. Body shop, 7,000 square feet, 12,000 square feet outside, two homes on that same block. I own a 20,000 square foot building with 23,000 square feet outside that I'm building into daycare for 287 kids. That's going to be $20 million project. Build the $7 million.
So you'll never be satisfied. That's what you're basically telling me.
No,
you'll
I'm not be- saying that. I'll be satisfied. But I mean, there's a lot of stuff that I have to do with money. If you Like, and again, I'm asset rich, I'm cash poor. It's not, when you're buying, anybody in real estate will tell you they usually don't have money because they refi, put it into the next project, into the next project. And a lot of times it's creative deal structuring to make it happen. But I mean, I'll probably be satisfied at some point. But to society, I'm just going to keep showing about what I'm doing. The guys could come home, they could do the right thing, they could make a difference, they could help their communities, other communities. And I mean, that's not like a defiant thing for me. It is, because I feel like, I always say that because I was in prison, the reason I'm successful or becoming successful is because I've been to prison, not despite of. So if I didn't go, I probably wouldn't be where I'm at today. But I'll just keep doing it and keep showing what I could do, and we'll see how far I could take it.
It's important. That's when I was on the inside, I created a platform called the Groves Notebook. And the reason that I did this, we would have state reps, politicians, city councilmen come in, and they would be like, well, y'all always talking about getting a LIFA bill off the ground, and you know, y'all want parole eligibility, you know, for long termers, but like, what are y'all doing? They had no clear understanding exactly what we were doing on the inside. So it was important for me to go ahead and force feed the general public on what we're doing. So you send your certificates to me, you send your diplomas, you send anything that you're accomplishing while you're in prison, send me a couple pictures of yourself, but also a 102-page bio, and we created a portfolio. My man Suave helped me, you know, on the outside. And this is what we're talking about, the resources, the connection, to go ahead and make sure that we had an avenue to display what we're doing and, you know, what we're doing. So I'm huge on, like you just said, showing them better than I can tell them. So I want to continue to use the Groves Notebook, LWOP Radio, the conversations that we're having here today to educate the general public.
What percentage of inmates do you think make a difference when they're in jail? Like, what percentage do you think are coming out to make a difference or are making a difference for themselves,
I'm going to say in the penitentiary, I'd say if there's roundabout, let's just round it off to 40,000, it's a little under that right now. And I hate to say this, I'm gonna say maybe 40%. I'm going to say 20 are hungry, 40% are heading in a direction where they understand it should be higher. But the transition coming out here, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know that percentage. I know the percentage of the men and women that I surround myself with.
In the feds, I'll say maybe 10%. Maybe 10%. 90% are going to come out, do the same thing, or they're just, even if they don't, they're not doing anything.
Why is that the case, though? Why? What made your story different? What makes my story different? What makes the men and women we're talking about
successful? We want to change. We were at 10%. But that's not saying, that's like, we could change that. But to change that, you got to change the prison system, which is bigger than us. We could help with that because we understand the prison system. We understand what it needs. But the way it's set up right now, 90% are going to fail. Right,
they got the statistic that when I, you know, that's my field. Reentry is my field, and I study the way close to 1,000 men and women go come up for parole each and every month. I studied it for a five year window. It's either 47% actually are granted parole, and the other 53 isn't. Or next month the numbers flip flop. So. Yeah. It's impossible for not to have one particular month with a parole board seeing 70% of men and women that were capable of coming home and being productive members of society. So I know the system is built to fail. I sat in the rooms with the parole. That was my job. I was sitting in the room with parole because I needed to know how they thought. I needed to know what I needed to go ahead and tell the men that were coming in the room, what the parole board was looking for. So what we're saying here today is, that's what I'm saying, I know what you're saying, that you got to want it.
You have to.
You got to be hungry.
If you don't want it.
You have to be educated. Yep.
You
have to surround yourself with the right people. You have to go about the, like what you said, the opportunity, me meeting you through somebody, you know, we both had the same acquaintance. Like you said, it could have just been like, damn, that was a great guy. You know, we had a great conversation that particular day. No, I seen your hunger, and when you said, you know, that there would be certain things that, you know, that you would be willing to do with me too, business wise, that kind of put a fire under my ass too, because it was certain things that I wanted to dive into as far as recovery house, having a parole ready house for men and women coming home from penitentiary. And I remember you telling me, you said, man, you know, if it makes sense, man, if it makes business sense, man, you're doing it the right way, you're doing it for the right reasons. You told me flat out, you said, man, I'll build it. So, you know, that right there, that kind of like put a fire under my ass, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing here. I want to ask you, what do you see yourself, though, in the next 5 to 10 years? Because you're ambitious, so where do you see yourself in the next
It always changes. But I hope to finish this daycare and then build a few more, and maybe sell it to private equity or keep it. I mean, I have an idea. One daycare is worth a certain multiplier. Businesses are sold on multipliers. So if your average business is sold on 2.5-3 times, anywhere from 2.5 to 4.5 times, it's net profits. But if you have a business that's big enough, if you have multiple locations, they're big enough, then the multiplier changes depending on the business category. And the daycare business category, it changes from 7 to 9. So now the same daycare, if you have one, if it's making $1 million, is worth, let's call it $4 million. If you have 5 locations, that same location is worth anywhere from 7 to 9. So, I mean, that's business-wise, that's where I see myself going right now, but it's subject to change.
Do you ever see retirement? Because you don't seem like a retirement type of dude.
I love working, so for me, it's not really work. I just like putting the deals together. I like making the difference. For me, daycare is education, right? So I'm not building the daycare just to make money. I'm doing grow gardens to teach kids to grow vegetables, how it applies to them. You know, this is food that they're going to eat. I want the best education, because for kids, 0 to 3 is the most important age for development. How you develop the first 3 years is a big factor of how you'll be when you're 20, 25, 26. So I want to build a product that is very small out here. There's not a lot of good daycares. And then I know the money will come. So money, if you're focused on the money,
solely on money,
you probably will never be successful. Okay, and I tell young guys this all the time. Don't think about what car you want to drive, what airplane you want to buy, or whatever. Think about making a difference. Be passionate about what you're doing, and the byproduct of your success is that house, is that car, and whatever else you want. You're automatically going to have that as long as you're passionate and good at what you do.
That's important, with something that you just said about doing things for the right reason. When I was in the penitentiary, I worked in the law library for 15 years. I surrounded myself with, I remember when I first came to Greaterford, and may he rest in peace, Marco Maldonado, Mujahid, good friend of mine. As soon as I got into jail, he said, listen, man, you're working in the law library. You're working in the library. But I'm like, nah, man. You know, at the time, I just got my trade certification. I believe that was where I was going, in electronics. So I was like, I'm a hands-on type of dude. But go inside a library, and I remember they would sit at the table, and it was about 4 or 5 dudes sitting at the table, and they were discussing the law. They had newspapers out, talking Wall Street, talking about politics. And I had nothing to lend to that conversation at first. I told myself when I went back to the block that day, I said, I'll be damned if the next day I come, I don't have something to lend to that conversation. They say if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. You want to surround yourself with people you can learn things from. So it took me to rewire my brain to understand this is where I wanted to go. I have read this book one time, and my apologies to the author that I don't remember the name, but it was talking about a 16-year-old kid getting a car. And when he first got his car, his father said, listen, I'll buy you the car, but what I won't do is help you fix it or put the things in it so you may want. So he went ahead and wanted the system. So he went to the system place, got himself a system, brought it back. You can learn everything on YouTube now. So he went ahead and got the system. He worked on the system all the whole entire night. So he cuts on the car, he hits the lights, he puts on the radio, it's jumping, it's banging. You know, the system sounds nice. So he wakes up the next morning. And when he gets up in the morning, he gets in the car, he hits the ignition, he hits the music, nothing happens. He messes with it for about 15 minutes. So he can't wait. He goes to work. When he comes back from work, he gets in the car again, hits the ignition, puts on the lights, hits the radio. The radio comes on. He can't realize why the radio doesn't work during the day, but it goes ahead and works at night. So when he finally got back to the house, he lifted up the hood. What he realized was he wired the radio to the lights instead of the battery. So I use that analogy because if you don't wire your brain correctly, it's only going to work some of the times. It's important that we rewire our brains the right way to work accordingly every single day. And that's why I'm here today. I had to change my life. I had to change my surroundings. I had to change my educational background. And most importantly, I had to change my heart spiritually. I was told I would die in prison. I am never going to stop saying it because I am here because of God and my life changes. So my question to you is, I kind of want to end this with, you know, family. Family is important to me. What are you doing? Do you have kids? Because we never even discussed
that. I have a daughter, yeah.
Okay. What were you, because you just said the first 3 years of her life, and we don't have to get into her age or anything like that, but how important is it that you instill all the things that you've learned after the penitentiary that she knows as far as moving forward, family?
Well, it's the most important. Yeah, of course. That's my biggest investment is my daughter. So all the other stuff is, of course, less important. You're doing it. Anything you're doing it for your children. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have kids, but It changes your outlook.
And I say that because I lost my daughter during COVID on the inside. I don't mind sharing this because I love her and she's still here with me today, but she had a scholarship to go to Penn State. She had a 2-year scholarship to go to Penn State, so she was a lacrosse star. I've always been athletic. I've always played sports. And her girlfriend breaks her arm her senior year. They prescribe a girlfriend Percocets. Our daughter never did drugs in her life, but that's her friend. That's her surroundings. That's her, you know, that's who she deals with. She ended up taking a piece of perk, and from the age of 18 to 27, she struggled with addiction. She wasn't on the streets. She wasn't, stealing to go ahead and supply her habit. But that's the trajectory that life sent her down. So in 2020, she ended up coming down here to visit her family in North Philadelphia. I'm from North. And when she was down there, she purchased a Percocet off the street, which she never did before. And it took her life. So that's something I will always live with. That's my drive. I have a son out here. He's 28 years old. You know, I have 2 grandchildren. And I live vicariously through them. I'm going to make sure that they win. So going back to your point, family is super important to me. People don't understand that when they hear us talk because they think we're selfish individuals. If you went to jail, you had to have a certain amount of selfishness in you in order to go ahead and abandon your family, your loved ones, and everything that you ever tried to create. So where are you at with gratitude? I don't know where you're at spiritually, but where you at with gratitude like each and every day? Because when I jumped in the car with you, I'm like, what's up, man? You doing great? He said, man, I'm doing great. I'm alive. I'm doing great every day. So talk a little bit about gratitude.
That's probably one of the bigger lessons that you learn in prison, to appreciate life, appreciate freedom. I told you I'm not done doing what I'm doing business-wise, but I'm always appreciative. I don't ever feel like, I feel like I could do much more, but I'm appreciative of what I have today. I'm appreciative, I'm thankful, okay? And even when sometimes you struggle, you're always gonna struggle mentally in certain aspects, I always am able to say, okay, this is a struggle, but it's nothing. I'm healthy, I'm happy, I have other things going on. It's like looking at your cup half full or half empty. So as long as you have a positive perspective, like that negative person in prison who, or anywhere, who is always gonna win with the negativity, the same way, the positive person always sees the cup as half full. So it's okay to feel bad, to feel down, but you could only do it for so long. You gotta shake yourself off and say thank you. And as long as you have the perspective of saying thank you to life, to God, to whatever you believe in.
Opportunities.
Yeah, you'll be blessed with more opportunities.
I want to go ahead and, first of all, if you got any questions for Lenny, you got any questions for me, send them in. We're going to get back to them. We're going to answer them. Before we leave, I want you to speak about, you know, exactly. I want you to talk about your body shop, where it's located, anything that you got going on that you might want to go ahead and get out there to us. You know?
Yes, I mean, my body shop is on 2838 D Street, Evolution Auto Body. It's in Kensington. If you want your car fixed after accident, give us a call. But really, it's not, you know, that's just something. That's just,
Phone number.
Yeah, I don't even know my phone number.
We'll get it.
Maybe it's
no. We'll get it.
Yeah. We're online. We're on Instagram. We have a strong presence, 8,400 followers, all organic.
Yeah. Is that the only platform you're on, Instagram?
I me personally, Lenny Churn. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, plus the shop, my real estate. I build sometimes for myself, sometimes for clients. But that's about it. If someone needs to find me for help, God bless. If you have any questions, I'd love to talk to you, love to help you.
All right. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. This is LWOP Radio. Tune in to Fet Life Station. All major platforms. We're here every Friday from 11 to 12, 12 to 1. We out here. We doing the things. Listen, man, I'm going to thank you, Lenny, for coming in, man. I want to
thank you,
man.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Keep doing what you're doing, man. This is not the last interview. Okay. Next time I talk to you, you might have amassed 100 properties. Listen, man, I appreciate your time.
No problem.
Man.
It's a
tune
pleasure.
In every week, man.
Got all these demons in me. Lord, wash all this blood off my hands. All this greed and envy. All around me had to cut my loosens. It's so much easier to fly when the burden. I could point the finger, but nobody's perfect. Should've known better. We still run it up. If you get content with just okay, then you don't want enough. Paper chase to sum it up. Running from these demons, I've been dreaming about them hunting us. Paranoid is on them tuck. But the press, we gotta slide. Try and put this pride aside. Attitude gonna get me killed. I get that from my mama's side. Movie time.